if you wanted Cam Newton, you were going to have to give the Carolina Panthers a draft pick, and you're going to have to take on Cam Newton's $19 million salary. It's going to be a difficult thing for a team to sign him without examining him themselves, so it could take a while. But I think being cut should help his market because it clears at least a couple of the hurdles while that health hurdle still remains.
Live sports may have come to a standstill, but the NFL offseason stopped for no one. Except, maybe, Cam Newton. ESPN senior writer and deals professor Bill Barnwell joins the show to explain why the former MVP is still available and what other lessons we can take from a free agency period that isn't over yet. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Thursday, April 2nd. This is ESPN Daily.
You don't remember the early shows.
Oh, buddy. How you holding up, Bill?
I'm good. I am living that grading life.
You're good and you're busy because while most sports have come to a standstill, the NFL did not. They have not. They will not. Free agency not only started on time, it was extremely active. Many deals were signed, which means you had to grade many signings and trades. Now, Bill, you are a notoriously tough grader, and I feel like if you were on ratemyprofessor.com, you'd have some GMs leaving you angry comments.
I know, finally, there's a chance to criticize me anonymously on the internet.
I would never. Well, today, Bill, you took a step back and you kind of looked at all of these signings in aggregate and wrote about the big lessons and takeaways from free agency this year. But I want to talk about a couple of players that have not been signed. Cam Newton and Jadeveon Clowney, two former number one overall picks that are still available. Why are they still available?
Well, Mina, I think this is probably the most significant example of the NFL being affected by the coronavirus. And I think we're seeing the impact of coronavirus on each team's confidence with regards to arranging medicals for these extremely valuable and possibly expensive players. And Clowney is the most prominent free agent out there by a considerable margin, an incredibly talented player who is a game-changing pass rusher. Typically, those guys are going to get about $20 million per year on a multi-year contract and have their pick of a number of teams handing them that option. But if you can't get appropriate medical information on Jadeveon Clowney's knee, which has microfracture surgery in its past, or the core muscle injury that cost him time in 2019, you're not going to feel comfortable offering him that sort of massive deal. Cam Newton, a guy who has not been healthy since the first half of 2018 when he was playing like an MVP caliber quarterback, but since then, a shoulder injury, Lisfranc injury to his foot, have cost him pretty much the last year and a half of healthy football. So if you're a team that wants to commit to Cam Newton at quarterback, you can't do that without the proper medical information. So it really has slowed down both of those guys' markets.
Do you think teams are spooked a little bit by the fact that the organizations that would seem to know these players and their bodies, Seattle, where Jadeveon played, or Carolina, which cut Cam, didn't want them to come back? Now, Seattle might still want him to come back, but apparently hasn't offered Clowney a big contract.
That should be a lesson for all free agents, and it doesn't stop teams 99% of the time. So I think this is the one exception where we are seeing teams who are maybe paying attention to that, because typically that should stop teams from paying a lot of free agents, and yet teams are very comfortable giving free agents a ton of money.
I want to ask you another question about Cam, because Bill, if you had told me just a few months ago that he would be out there without a job, that the Panthers wouldn't have been able to trade him for anything, apparently, I would have not believed anything you were saying. And that's true of a lot of things these days. But he is available. He has been posting videos of himself working out. I gave up on it. He had a physical, I think that was organized by Carolina, and he was playing well as recently as the beginning of 2018. So let me ask you this. Do you think he is a desirable starting candidate, and where would you like to see him play?
I think a healthy Cam is a desirable quarterback.
Newton is under center and he calls for the snap. He takes it. Fake the handoff, McCaffrey. Palms it left side again. Running outside the numbers 10, 5. With his arms in the air, he crosses the goal line. Touchdown. Cam Newton looking like
a... Like you said, I mean, he was at the very least a top 10 quarterback in the first half of the 2018 season with North Turner. Really the first time he's had an excellent, or someone who's regarded as an excellent offensive coordinator as his coordinator in Carolina. So I think a quarterback who, with the right situation, can be a difference maker. Now, is there that spot out there? I do think there is a spot that makes sense, which is the Los Angeles Chargers. A team that has committed to Tyrod Taylor, but Tyrod has no guaranteed money remaining in his contract. A team that could draft someone like Justin Herbert with the 6th overall pick in this year's draft. But if, for example, they found that Cam Newton was healthy, well, they could draft a left tackle with the 6th overall pick and then take that defense, which we know is very good, and led that team to the playoffs in 2018, and work with Cam to kind of go forward and compete for a playoff spot in 2020. I think a healthy Cam is absolutely capable of doing that, but we're not going to know whether he is really the same guy he was in the first half of 2018 until we see him on a football field.
Bill, as I mentioned, you are a notoriously tough grader. You do not hand out many A's, but you and I have been talking as free agency has gone on. And while you haven't loved that many deals, you haven't hated that many. There haven't been many massive overspends. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's a really interesting thing happening. And we talked about this on your show. And it's come up in the NBA as recently as a few years ago, which was there were agents and players and teams who were all preparing for the salary cap to spike when the NBA signed its new TV deal, which it did. A lot of the contracts that were signed immediately after that salary cap spike turned out to be pretty bad. Now, NFL contracts are different, of course, and the NFL career span is different than the NBA career span, but we're seeing a lot of players and a lot of agents who want to make shorter commitments in the hopes of hitting free agency 2 or 3 years from now, which will be after the spike in the NFL salary cap from those new television contracts, which are all coming up next year. And to that point, last year, if you look at the top 20 contracts handed out in free agency by average annual value, 16 of the top 20 contracts were for 4 years or more. This year, just 8 of those deals were for 4 more years. And it wasn't because they were dramatically worse players, still a pretty talented bunch of guys at the top of free agency, but those contracts have been much shorter. And I think a lot of those guys think they can get paid in 2022 or 2023.
Do you think there are other players who would have wanted longer deals but didn't get them?
Yeah, I think there were guys who think, because I'm not going to get to 2023 as a veteran, I'm probably going to be finished at that point. If this is my last chance to get a long-term contract, I want to get a deal with 2 years of guarantees or 3 years of guarantees on a 4 or 5 year contract. That didn't really happen.
LA Charger fans, what's up? It's Chris Harris Jr. I'm excited to officially join.
And look at Chris Harris as someone who, one of the best cornerbacks in football for several years now. Everyone sort of anticipated he would get that massive contract, but in the end, he got 1 year of guaranteed money. Even guys like Logan Ryan or Jason Peters or Clay Matthews, still pretty useful veterans, they're still out there on the free agent market. And hey, even Tom Brady ended up getting $25 million per year from the Bucs. I mean, this is not a situation where those veterans were getting top of the line money, even if it was just for a 1 or 2 year pact.
So, Bill, you did give the Brady deal an A for the Bucs. From the team perspective, what were some of your other favorite signings in free agency?
I actually like the Ndamukong Suh signing for the Bucs.
Ndamukong Suh, one of the better free agent defensive linemen on the market, moments ago reached agreement to return to Tampa Bay on a 1 year deal worth about $8 million.
Where it's, you know, a team that, because Jameis Winston was throwing so many interceptions, so many pick sixes, their defense by traditional numbers looks abysmal, but by advanced metrics actually looks really good. Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea, their other nose tackle in Tampa, improved that defense from 31st in the league in rush defense DVOA to number 1 they were went from being awful against the run to being incredible against the run. So I love getting him back on a one-year contract for about $8 million. Brian Poole, the slot cornerback for the Jets, got a one-year $5 million deal. That to me was an A grade, which is pretty hard to pull off if you're the New York Jets. So it's always rare to have an opportunity to compliment the Jets in the middle of an offseason. But here we are. It's been a strange one.
Bill, Brian Poole is such a hipster pick. Well, let's go negative for a second, as we are wont to do. From the team perspective, whose free agency did you not love?
Okay. So it feels weird to say this because they're being lauded for the brilliant trade they made, which is true. But the Arizona Cardinals did not get a lot right outside of having DeAndre Hopkins fall into their lap with the Houston Texans.
The Texans traded that guy, DeAndre Hopkins, to the Cardinals for David Johnson and a second round pick.
The signings they made just, they don't seem to add up. They gave Devondre Campbell a one-year deal for $8.5 million with four voidable years, which is just, you wouldn't trust someone to manage their checkbook if they were adding four voidable years onto a deal just to add a guy who's kind of middling to their roster this year. They gave Kenyon Drake the transition tender when running backs have not been very valuable. They signed Larry Fitzgerald, who is a legend, but not a very good receiver at this point, not a very impactful receiver at this point, to an $11 million contract. Guys like Devon Kennard, Marcus Gilbert. They're signing veterans who you wouldn't count on in meaningful roles and pay a pretty significant one-year salary to do so. So even though you're being given credit for the most brilliant move of the offseason, everything else they did was kind of bad.
All right, after the break, let's talk about how teams value different positions in free agency and what that might tell us about the draft. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Bill, one of the teams that I felt did well in free agency this year was Philadelphia. Now, as any Eagles fan would be happy, eager to tell you, didn't have great cornerbacks last year or wide receivers. But they went out and addressed one of those issues. They added star corner Darius Slay. They gave up a couple of draft picks to Detroit for him. Also gave him a $50 million extension. And then they added former Rams nickel corner Nickell Roby-Coleman, who they signed for about $1 million. Now, for those who haven't heard of him, yes, he is a nickel corner and his name is Nickell. I was particularly struck by that contract and how cheap it was. What did that tell you?
Yeah, Mina, the cornerbacks really didn't get paid, I think, what a lot of people were expecting heading into the offseason. Nickell Roby-Coleman only got a one-year deal. Brian Poole only got a one-year deal. Last year, we saw slot corners who were pretty good get multi-year contracts north of $8 million per season. And then even the guys at the top of the market. Chris Harris, we mentioned earlier, only got one guaranteed year on his contract. Darius Slay was expecting record-setting money. He got $15 million basically per season for the next couple years. Even Byron Jones, which was the quote-unquote record-setting contract, after you account for the cap inflation that happens when the NFL raises their salary cap each year, Byron Jones did not get a top of the market deal. He got something closer to sixth or seventh historically. So cornerbacks are very valuable, and it seems like they should be rising faster than the cap is growing. But the top of the market is actually rising at a slower rate than we're seeing with the salary cap as a whole.
Which is a little bit puzzling, given that the NFL has become such a passing-oriented game, Bill. And what's also puzzling to me is wide receivers, who also factor into that, could be had for not too much. Robbie Anderson, who's a very good player from the Jets, signed a fairly modest two-year deal.
Adam Schefter also reporting free agent wide receiver Robbie Anderson is leaving the Jets. This for a two-year, $20 million deal with Carolina.
And of course, as we have discussed repeatedly on this show, DeAndre Hopkins was involved in one of the most lopsided trades in recent NFL history. The Vikings parted ways with Stephon Diggs. They got a bit of a more respectable return.
Bills are trading a first-round draft pick this year, along with a fifth-round pick, a sixth-round pick, and a fourth-rounder in 2021 to the Vikings for Stephon Diggs in a 2020 seventh-round draft pick.
But still, he is also one of the better wide receivers in the league. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the teams are especially interested in this wide receiver draft class. Todd McShay's most recent mock draft has 12 wide receivers coming off the board in the first two rounds of the draft. So I think a lot of those guys who were veterans, who were not difference makers, didn't really see their market develop. Robbie Anderson, like you said, is a good player, but didn't get that $14 million per year contract I think his agents were expecting coming into free agency. A lot of the mid-tier guys, like to bring up someone Eagles fans are excited about leaving, Nelson Agholor.
Put some people down. My man just started throwing babies out the window. We was catching him. Unlike Agholor and his mishaps, I like to put that out there.
Had to settle for a one-year deal. The Hopkins return wasn't what we expected. Sammy Watkins is a guy who I think, if he gets cut by the Chiefs, is going to have to settle for a one-year deal for modest money. Even the Amari Cooper deal looks good on paper, but it's a very friendly situation for the Cowboys. Only 2 years, really, of guarantees on that contract. So any veteran wide receiver who is a little vulnerable has to feel a little threatened about not only this wide receiver class to come, but also the possibility that they might be on the street come August or September.
Are there any positions that did see a jump in contracts?
Not really. And that's sort of the interesting thing, given that this free agency period happened just immediately after this new CBA. We didn't really see anyone reset the top of the market after you account for the rising salary cap. Now, we saw spots here and there. The middle class of offensive linemen, for example, guys like George Pham and Hal Vitae, they're not really very experienced offensive linemen, but they got contracts right around $10 million per season, which is pretty good. The top of the tight end market, which has been stagnant now for 6 years since Jimmy Graham signed his extension with the Saints in 2014. Austin Hooper getting $10.5 million per year on his contract with the Browns is technically resetting the market for tight ends. But after you account for the cap, it's not really. I think you're going to have to wait for something like a George Kittle extension or a Travis Kelce extension to really reset the market for tight ends. We're going to see that with other positions as well. I think with quarterback, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes setting the market as opposed to a Tom Brady or a Philip Rivers. So we didn't really see free agents get a lot of top tier money this offseason.
Bill, one thing we see happen time and time again in free agency is that the teams that make good signings and good decisions tend to be teams that are already good and are maybe staying good for a reason. I mentioned I like the Eagles. Another team whose free agency I know both you and I liked is Baltimore, a very good team. Are there any organizations that surprised you, either in a good or a bad way?
I think both. I think the Bills were surprising in that this is an organization that's been built so much on their culture.
I'm looking to build a culture of winning.
Recruiting the right players, quote unquote.
And that starts inside these walls.
Trading for Stephon Diggs is a risk, but I think it's a good risk. They need a number one wide receiver. It puts John Brown and Cole Beasley in better situations for them to succeed. And it makes it easier to judge Josh Allen, right? Where now there's no excuses. Josh Allen has everything he could possibly ask for as a third-year quarterback, and this is going to be a make-or-break year for him with the Bills. And of course, hey, they added a bunch of former Panthers, a bunch of defensive line depth, all the stuff we love, in addition to that big risk with Diggs. Then on the other side, I think a bad surprise in a way was seeing what the Bengals did. They have been the most conservative team in the league by far in free agency after the Packers started spending last year or 2 years ago. And maybe they're following in the Packers' footsteps because they spent big money on Trey Waynes, DJ Reader. Even someone like Xavier Suofilo got more money than I would have expected. And it's something they would not typically have done in terms of investing in free agents in years past. And And even the Seahawks, I don't want to criticize here, but their offensive line additions, a team that has typically gone through the draft with very rare exceptions to adding offensive linemen to their roster, signed Cedric Ogbui, Brandon Shell, and BJ Finney. And I like Finney, but I don't think those other moves are especially great for the Seahawks. So a couple surprises there.
You know what, Bill? I give you a C.
You know what? That's still going to improve my Rate My Professor grade, so I'll take it.
Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, Mina.
Coming up, Asian American athletes speak out to stop xenophobia. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Here's another story I want you to know. Over the last couple of weeks, we've told you about athletes who are using their platforms and their resources to help people and groups who are affected by the coronavirus pandemic. One of those groups includes Asian Americans in the US, some of whom have been targeted in recent weeks with racist and xenophobic violence. The Undefeated's Martenzie Johnson recently highlighted a campaign from former UCLA gymnast Caitlin Ohashi, who is part Japanese, and Ram safety Taylor Rapp, who is of Chinese descent. It was conducted on behalf of a group called Athletes for Impact that's intended to bring attention to this violence, which has been on the upswing lately. The Asian Pacific Policy and Planning Council says they've received nearly 700 complaints of coronavirus-related assaults between March 19th and March 26th. And according to an FBI report obtained by ABC News, federal law enforcement has warned of an increase in hate crimes, citing, as an example, the stabbing of an Asian American family in Texas, including a 2-year-old child. There are less severe but equally terrifying stories from around the country of Asian Americans being harassed or intimidated when they go out in public. All of this stems, of course, from a place of hate and fear and also ignorance. Rapp told Johnson that while the disease may have originated in China, calling it the Chinese virus can fuel the fire behind the sort of attacks we're seeing now. Which, by the way, is why the World Health Organization announced years ago that they would stop placing geographic designations on diseases, and why you don't hear scientists and experts using that language either. As Rapp said, a virus doesn't have a race. And at a moment where there are so many real things contriving to keep people apart, he and others are hoping to stop unnecessary divisiveness. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.